Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Pirates are bad. No one's gonna worry if a pirate dies.
You know, Soltai rises again, right?
Right, the proverbial next time, like months from now.
It's Dino Tech.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined with my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay tonight, guys.
Awesome. Awesome. I hear your pizza just arrived.
It did. And my bread bites.
We're pulling the curtain back here at the Win Condition. But anyway, we got a lot to talk about today. We got to catch you up on the Magic story. We got a deck tech to bring you here. And then we wanted to talk a little news and some announcements and some speculation regarding the future of Magic. But before we get into all that, Greg, how has your week been?
Slow, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell you, man, work is really kicking my butt these first 2 weeks back from being off. It's been nothing but 12-hour days, and once it smooths out, I'm sure everything will be a lot more manageable. But
yeah, I heard there are some people that weren't pulling their weight while you were gone.
You know, it's hard. It's a big job, and there's lots of little intricacies, and all my customers like things just so. So now that I'm back, everyone's happy, and we shouldn't have any more problems moving forward. Speaking of not having problems, you will not have any problems ordering your product from Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com. Head on over to their website and order any Magic or other gaming products that your heart desires. And any order over $10, be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and get 10% off of your purchase. The proceeds will help to fund our future show giveaways. And at the end of this episode, we are going to announce our next giveaway. So stay tuned. It's exciting. So anyway, why don't we head on over to Lore Corner? We've got 2 weeks of story to catch you up on, so we will do our best to be efficient and cover all the necessary details for you. But there's a lot. There's a lot of running around, a lot of chasing.
Would you say there is.
Would you say it would even be considered a race, Greg?
It would definitely be a race. Yeah. It might have two parts, even.
It does. So if we take you through the race, part one, we first join up with
Vraska and crew on the Belligerent, if I remember correctly.
Actually, no. The first character, we see a new character here. We are at the first fort, the garrison at Fort Adanto. And there's some lookouts, and they notice a very ragged, starving, crazed vampire come upon them in the clearing. And this vampire is just ranting and raving about Saint Alendra and how great she is. And the guards are like, oh my gosh, there's this crazy vampire out here. You know, what are we going to do? He's obviously, you know, in his blood fast, and he's probably pretty dangerous, so we might have to just lay back a little bit. But after a little bit of convincing, they decide to let him. They're like, okay, you know, go on, come forth. But as he approaches, he all of a sudden just gets this, you know, this blood-crazed thirst about him, and he starts charging and clawing his way up the wall and immediately attacks a soldier who conveniently is armored with neck armor that prevents the fangs from penetrating the neck. So, you know, they're kind of ready for this. They've probably seen this once or twice before. And this person, or this vampire, I should say, we have been introduced to as Mavrin Fane. They immediately notice that he's trouble, and they're going to go ahead and take him down to the dungeon, or at least the holding cells, but not before they say, we will help you break your blood fast. You know, we're going to have a criminal for you, but just hang tight. We'll do the whole ceremony for you. So they kind of bring him down, throw him in a cell, and they Next to his criminal, correct.
So he starts talking about the first of their kind, St. Linda, to this criminal and asks him if he knows about St. Linda and the curse she bears to save the immortal son. And the criminal's like, I don't know about it. Why don't you tell me? So he does. St. Linda was a human, and she was there when the immortal son was stolen by a giant winged beast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? So because it was stolen, she tracked this winged beast to the Isle of Ixalan over the seas from Torzon. And in doing so, she found where it was at, but she wasn't able to grasp it. So she went back to Torzon, and she took on the original rites of vampirism and became the first vampire, where she then starts turning to other people to help her and aid in returning the immortal son. And that kind of starts us off towards what's going on there. Now, while he's talking about this, he gets more and more crazed. And he notices that there's a little bit of a gap in the wall. And, well, he's just so hungry. He tears through the wall, destroying it, and just charges for this man's throat and drains him within minutes, staining his armor in blood.
He is able to satiate his thirst for blood. And what's kind of funny is the guards come back, and instead of saying, "What have you done?" they go, "Oh, sorry, dude. We weren't able to do the whole ceremony for you. But hey, all's good," because Maverin jumps up and looks at them, and he's like, "Oh, yes, quite well, everything." He completely changes into, like, a normal civil being, and you can see just
the change.
Yeah, comparison between vampires on their blood fast and when they actually have satiated their thirst. And as we know, vampires on Ixalan only eat the criminal, the quote-unquote sick, and so are pious in their practice, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that's Maverin. Oh, he also mentioned something about his navigation tools being broken.
He didn't need them.
Yes, he keeps on saying, "I have no need for them. I am drawn by the power of Saint Linda herself." So anyway, then we move on and we start seeing another vampire. And this vampire is Vona. Originally, mm-hmm. she is known as Vona of Iedo. And she develops the name Butcher of Magan. And, Vona was, early on in her life, she went to church. She did all the things that she needed to do. But she always had this thirst for more. Like, she didn't want to just be the pious vampire that only
she had thirst.
Yes.
That was unquenchable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she immediately decided that, being a, taking part in the Legion of Dusk, she was, granted the ability to hunt down other pirates of the Brazen Coalition and, satiate her murderous thirst by killing these pirates. Because obviously, pirates are bad. No one's going to worry if a pirate dies. And it was just free fodder for her to go and pursue her own interests. But she was always a conqueror, but in the end, she was a hunter. Always wanting to go around and kill people.
She actually ended up hunting her own people of the land she was given after everything was calmed down on the Isle of Torzon.
That's true.
Continent of Torzon, sorry.
There you go. There you go. So Vona and her crew are sailing, and they come across the Belligerent. And she says, "Well, look at these pirates. They're going to make an excellent dinner for me and my crew. Let's get after them. We're obviously going to be more powerful than them. Let's take it." And as they get close
but,
to... Go ahead.
But as they get closer and closer, a storm grows between the two ships. As they look to the beach, they see a pair of merfolk waving their hands wildly, semi-wildly.
Oh, those darn merfolk.
Right? We know them as Tishana and Kumana. They are like, what the heck is up with this storm? Well, they're hungering. They need to get to the belligerent, but they just weren't able to. And both of the ships slam against the reef and are destroyed. Yep. As she comes out of the ship, she sees her crew dead or dying or trying to get back to the beach, whatever it may be. And she's just hungry. So anything she can find to eat is what she wants.
And she finds this guy, this other pirate, washed ashore. And so she starts kind of approaching him, and he kind of sees his imminent doom. And she says, do you recognize the
sovereignty of St. Olenda and the Legion of Dusk?
Of Queen Miralda, that's right. And in a desperate effort to save his life, he goes, yes, I do. And then she basically goes, okay, well, then you know that we kill pirates, and proceeds to kill him mm-hmm. and feast and, you know, continue to be the butcher that she is. So she's real nasty. You know, she really doesn't care too much for rules or regulations, but all she really cares about is feeding her own personal desire. So,
yeah.
So that's Vona. And
then
we come across our blue illusionist mind mage friend, Jace.
I don't know if he's our friend.
Well, he's my friend now that he's a lot cooler.
Okay. I'll give you that. He is cooler.
Okay. So he swims ashore. He and Vraska kind of reunite. And so they're looking around going, where, you know, what's going on? We're on this shore. And this storm just came out of nowhere. Like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. And Jace is like, well, this storm.
Somebody started that.
Yeah, this storm was conjured by something. So there's obviously more people here. So the crew kind of reassembles. We see Malcolm, Breeches, Gavin, and Amelia. And they all kind of, you know, regroup on the beach. And all of a sudden, they hear the sounds of a vampire, a ferocious vampire on the hunt. Jace exercises a slight bit of his power by reaching into this vampire's fragile little mind and causing it to go to sleep. And boom.
Yep.
The vampire just falls asleep, and he hears another thud and turns around and sees another vampire mid-attack just completely turned to stone. Obviously,
yeah,
the work of his.
And thumps to the ground.
Yeah.
Vraska there yep. behind it.
That's right. That's right. She warns him to close his eyes beforehand so as not to to be turned to stone himself. So anyway, so... There, you know, there's like, oh, wow, there's more people here. We have to, we better stay together and, continue on our quest, because they still have the thematic compass, which will tell them where they're supposed to go. So anyway, they kind of clean up the rest of the vampires as they're, you know, walking
well,
away.
Well, the crew stays behind to clean up the rest of the vampires. Well, Jason Braska take a dinghy up the river.
That's right.
Jace illusions them to be vanished, and Vraska makes them silent. She mans the oars and goes up the river so he can concentrate. While doing this, he reaches out with his mind to see what's in the local area. And, well, they're not alone. I mean, he feels both of them, but there's also a vampire. There's a merfolk.
Mm-hmm.
There's a human. And there's a minotaur? He doesn't know what that is.
Right. They haven't met the Minotaur yet.
So as they're going through, Vraska tells them that we're going to have to get off of this at some point, but we can go through at the time. And they're kind of lulling into this kind of happiness state. It's like, man, this is really nice. If I wasn't on the run, this would be a great date place. Maybe I'll take Jace on a date after everything's done.
That's right.
Right? So then we move stories, and we pick up with Whatley.
Oh wait, almost. There's a moment with between Jace and Vraska when they're talking about. Jace says, "You know, well, we were from Ravnica," and then she kind of grimaces, and then she says to Jace, "Ravnica isn't on this plane," and Jace goes, "This plane?
That's like, right.
What the heck do you mean by plane?" And then she goes, "Yeah, you know that thing where you feel your body come apart, but." That triangle appears above you and shoots you right back down. He goes, yeah. She goes, we can leave this place. We can go all kinds of different places, but there's something that's holding us here, and it's probably centered in the Golden City, because obviously that's what makes the thematic compass turn and focus somewhere else, but it's constantly focused in this area. So they need to go to this place in order to be able to planeswalk away and escape. And Jace is like, his mind is just blown. He's got a billion questions for Vraska and just starts spouting off one after the other. And you can definitely see that, you know, things are moving forward. Jace is starting to become much, much more curious and aware of what's going on around him, but he's not entirely sure yet. So anyway, we move on to our next person.
So Whatley is rushing towards this beach, the same beach where the storm was. She needs to find her guide to the Golden City, the compass, which everybody wants. The merfolks want it. The Minotaur wants it. Everybody wants the compass because it shows them where Araska is. So as she rides her dinosaur out, she comes across a person, not just any person. It's a merfolk with emerald green skin, Tashana. Our merfolk, and they both power up, getting ready to fight each other and just kill each other. And then, like, wait a minute. Whatley's like, I don't want to attack you. I just want to save my people and go to Orozca. And Tashana's like, oh, okay. Well, I'll get you there because of Kamena, but after that, we're done. Okay. I guess so. Since you saw the Golden City, we could totally do that. So they stop fighting and they run off. While they're running, they realize that Tashana realizes that there's illusion magic on the river, and that's got to be the compass and that green eye, the green skinned person.
Right.
So they're like, okay, well, we don't really need to deal with them right now, but we may have to. And Tashana's having a hard time keeping up. Whatley's having a hard time keeping up with Tashana. So they're running off to fight Kamena. And that ends the race, part one. They do talk about where Orozca is, but Tashana's like, I don't actually know where it is. So
then, yes, in the race, part two, we join back up with Vraska. Again, you know, journeying with her buddy Jace. More than buddies, if you ask me. So they're on their little boat. Vraska starts to sing, and she starts singing about
an old Golgari hymn.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of reminiscing in her old Ravnican Golgari days. And, you know, Jace is, you know, he's like, well, you know, because the song's all about, you know, decay and rot and all this stuff. And Jace is like, that's a cheery song. And, but, you know, Vraska knows that that's her people and, you know, eventually who she's going to become the ruler of. So, anyway, they keep going, and it's just, you know, they're trekking, you know, sharing little bits and pieces here and there.
In this, he kind of reaches out his mind. He feels the birds around, and he's like, man, I could break their minds so easily, but I don't. It's just like Vraska singing a song, he thinks to himself. And Vraska thinks to herself, it's like, this guy listened.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't like me, I can trust him. He is a good person, no matter what. And that she didn't need another person to make her complete, and that she could be who she was. And he was the validation that she needed, and she kind of grew from that. And she was really upset about what had happened to Jace. And she says in her mind's eye, Vraska couldn't wait to petrify whoever had stolen his memories.
Yes. Yes, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So they're definitely getting some good quality time together and learning to become real good partners. You know, something that we never would have ever even imagined seeing.
You know, Soul Tie rises again, right?
Oh, yeah. Good point. Oh, my God. Could we see a Soul Tie Jace? No. No, not even.
No.
Okay, so they run into a vampire, too. Let's see here. That's right. So this vampire has been kind of beaten down. He's not, like, all there. He's exhausted. You know, he's winded. Not at full strength at all. So, you know, Jace has this illusionary rainstorm going to keep them protected. But this vampire snatches the thematic compass and takes off. And they go, oh, man, well, you know what? We better get after this guy because we need that thing. So, anyway, they take off and Jay starts, you know, listening into this vampire's mind. And,
well, don't forget, he also listened into Tashana and saw something that he never thought he would be able to see, the ley lines of the world.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Do you think she's a planeswalker?
No.
No?
No.
You just think because she's a merfolk and she has that connection, she's able to make
I mean, remember, Nyssa was able to do that on Zendikar before her spark.
True.
Yeah. So Whatley and Tashana is where we go to next as Jace and Vraska continue on the boat. So okay. As we're doing this, so they are chasing after the vampire because they need
the compass.
The compass, right. And Jason realized something also when looking into Shauna's mind that where the where Rozka is, it was protected by an enchantment. That was something that Tashana didn't know. But Jace was able to recognize it because of who he is. So Tashana and Whatley are chasing after the vampire. They chase him over glades, through valleys, everywhere, and they cannot believe the veracity and his ability to just run.
Right.
And I mean, we don't know what's going on with the Brazen Coalition or anything. We do know that Jace was sending up flares for the rest of the team to follow them. Well, they get to a clearing. They finally catch up to this vampire. Whatley commands the dinosaur to grab him, shake him, drops the thematic compass where she picks it up.
Right.
And then, at that moment, a sail wraps around her and binds her together.
Right.
We look back and we see the entire crew of the Belligerent with Jace and Vraska.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They totally just grab them. And they leave them wrapped up and they take the thematic compass and they leave. And at that point, Whatley and Tashana's like, all right, well, we need to go after them. He's like, no, I've brought you where I need to. You know where to go from here. I got to go do my thing. So Tashana leaves.
That's
so Whatley's
right.
There by herself, and the Brazen Coalition's all gone. And then as Whatley's summoning a new mount because hers got killed by this and that, things happen. It's called a river. A chain whips around her ankle, pulls her back, slamming her down on the ground. And then we get Ongroth.
Yes.
And we're like, ugh. She does not want to deal with him again. A pit of despair just kind of wells up inside of her. She is afraid to the very core of her being. And
because of her previous interaction with him. And
right.
The last time that he sent his chains out, they were burning hot. And this time, seeing as the chains weren't burning hot, it was a little suspicious. But he knows, Ongarth knows, or Angrath knows, that Whatley is a planeswalker. And so he starts to talk to Whatley and say, you're like me. And she goes, I'm nothing like you. And he goes, no, not like that. Like,
whoa. He says, wait, I want to talk to you. And Whatley's like, I don't want to hear it. But you're like me, a fellow planeswalker. Yeah. So she says to herself, spectacular. The murder monster wants to be my friend.
Yeah. Then we move back to Vraska. And once again, she has the thematic compass in her hand, and it's humming away. It's vibrating, leading him in the right direction. And so finally, after a long trek through the jungle, they begin to see the giant golden spires of Orozca in the distance. And they're thinking to themselves, oh my gosh, this is it.
We've
made it. You know, like, is this Orozca? Is the jungle around us, you know, Orozca? And another little funny line here. Jay says to Vraska, I think it's something that's not supposed to be here. And they're referencing the immortal sun. And Jay says, something introduced it to this world. You know, it's not from here. And then he goes, it might also just be a hunk of rock and not do anything. Maybe Lord Nicholas is a rock collector.
Yeah.
And Vraska goes, I honestly wouldn't put it past him. He strikes me as a man with weird hobbies. So a little bit of comic relief there. But anyway, so they push on, and they're so close. They know that they're right there. And then all of a sudden, a crack in the earth, you know, starts to form, and it starts to turn into a crevice, and water starts to surge through, and almost out of what is out of the earth, ripping trees and land aside as it emerges, the golden city of Orozca erupts from the ground. And, you know, it definitely seems like, going back to what Jace was saying about it not being from here, it's not the nicest thing to nature around it. It definitely seems very violent, you know, very not of the forest, not of the merfolk and the ways that, you know, they're used to seeing power and coexistence. But anyway, this earthquake, this shaking, this crevice is happening, and they start to hear these loud primal noises. And it occurs to them that something had awoken. So the city is here, and not only that, but there's beings that, protectors of Orozca probably, are coming to life and animating, and they don't see them immediately, but this crevice just gets larger and larger and larger until you see Jace start to fall through the cracks and or through the crevice, and Vraska the same. And so they begin tumbling down. And at the very
Vraska loses sight of Jace.
Yes.
And as this is happening, she starts seeing images. Images of, yes, that's right, Ravnica. After that, then she yells out to him, asking if he saw it. It gets no response. Then she sees the hull of the Guild Pack and Niv-Mizzet. And she realizes that it was Jace's memory when he became the Guild Pact, as she sees him hanging on for dear life, blood flowing from his forehead to a gash, and she realizes that he is remembering
his eyes
everything.
Are glowing blue, like this bright blue, as he's, yeah, absolutely. And then it strikes her, if he remembers all this stuff, he'll remember our past as well. And all this time that has been such a joy for her, such a wonderful experience, would all just erase in the moment, you know, in a blink of an eye, and Jace could return to his old self, and she's extremely worried and scared. So that's the point at which we leave off the story of Ixalan. And so now
and next time we'll go to Rivals of Ixalan in like 3 months.
There we go. So now we have to wait for the next set to come out, which won't be for a while. And then we can pick back up on this story. So very interesting, very intriguing. Will Jace remember everything? Will he just go in and out of a weird state or stream of consciousness? Will he remember?
Will he discard Vraska's relationship?
Right. Will he still be a friendly Jace to Vraska and yet remember most, if not everything, from his past? Tune in next time to find out what happened.
I mean, it won't be next time. It'll be a little bit of a while.
Right, the proverbial next time, like months from now will be the next time. So,
yes.
Sheesh. So.
Hey, I'm a brat, okay?
True. But we'll forgive you for that.
Thanks.
Anyway. Let's move on into our next segment. We played some EDH prior to this podcast, didn't we?
We did. It was my Gishoth deck, Dino deck, versus
my Tishana deck.
Thank you.
Built around the Evolve mechanic. So I won't deck tech mine out, but the main idea behind mine was you play these little creatures with this mechanic called Evolve, which says if another creature enters the battlefield with a greater power or toughness than this creature, it gets a 1/1 counter.
Yeah.
So manipulating counters, doubling up on that stuff. Maybe we'll deck tech it in a future episode, but that's the main idea behind it. So what we're really here to do is talk some dinos and some tech. Yeah.
It's Dino Tech.
That sounds like a kid's show. I love it.
I mean, was it?
No.
I mean, it's not Dino Wars, right? It's weird. We're not talking about Autobots assembling.
No. This is a straight up Dino Tech. So why don't we get into it? Why don't you tell us all what Gishoth does?
Well, Gishoth is a 5 generic red, white, green legendary creature dinosaur. Has vigilance, haste, and trample. Yeah, it's a plethora of things. And what he does is whenever he deals combat damage to a player, reveal a number of cards equal to the damage dealt and put any number of dinosaurs into play. So I play it kind of casually, but a lot of things, depending on where you want to go, you want to take advantage of that ability because it's bonkers. Especially if you can get double strike on him, hit in for like 14 and look at the top 14 cards and put out any number of dinosaurs.
So why don't we start out with that? What gives Gishoth double strike?
There are a lot of options you can go with to give him double strike. You've got Goring Ceratops, which is a dinosaur that says whenever it attacks, attacking creatures you control gain double strike. Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a 5 drop. And it's like 3 white, white. Let me find that. Other cards. True Conviction, which is a 6 drop enchantment. 3 generic white, white, white. Creatures control get lifelink and double strike. Goring Ceratops is a 7 drop 3/3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not actually running True Conviction because I did not get one. Another one, this is Sweet Tech. A Johnny, Caller of the Pride, which the -3 on him is target creature gains flying and double strike until end of turn.
A flying double striking Gishoth seems pretty powerful.
Right? So those are just a few of them. I mean, you have other options, things like Fire Shrieker if you want to go with equipment, because you can play with a lot of cards that search up equipment or attach them. Things like Sigarda's Aid or not.
Right. Now, quick question. Did you find at all that you had to cut things because of the saturation level of the dinosaurs in your deck? Or are there not enough dinosaurs to really bring that problem to you that you did need to find other ways to fill the deck out?
You know, a lot of the dinosaurs that I have in there feel lackluster because most of them are commons and uncommons. Now, the very few rares are good, but there's a lot of dinosaurs I'm not running because they just don't do anything. Colossal Dreadmaw, Charging Montresor, I'm not running them because I wanted to run other cards that worked with Enrage triggers. Things like Pyrohemia.
Okay, well, what's probably one of your best enraged dinosaurs that you just feel good when he hits the battlefield?
See, I think Bellowing Aegisaur is my favorite.
And what does Bellowing Aegisaur do?
It is 5 generic and white, 3/5 with enrage, and it says whenever it is dealt damage, put a 1/1 counter on each other creature I control.
Oh, nice.
Right? But you accompany that with something like Pyrohemia, where you're like, okay, Pyrohemia for 1 red. If you don't know what Pyrohemia is, it's a 2 generic red-red enchantment that says pay a red and deal damage to each creature and each player. If there are no creatures in play, sacrifice Pyrohemia.
So it's almost like a pestilence, but in a different color.
Exactly what it is. But if I have those two on the board with Bellowing Aegisaur, I get to pay 1 red, my team gets +1/+1, and none of them die.
And I get to do it again. As many times as you have red mana.
Not as many times, because Bellowing Aegisaur will eventually die. But then you pair that up with another enchantment that's in green called Rites of Passage, which is two generic and a green. It says whenever a creature is dealt damage and survives, so it can't die, it gets a 1-1 counter.
So then if you have both of those out, you could pretty much stack the triggers and do as much damage as you want.
Go to whenever I don't have any red mana. Yeah.
There you go. Wow. Wow, that's nice.
And on top of that, it's definitely at whenever I want to do it.
So there's quite a few enrage creatures in this deck. I know of one, so I'll talk about the one that I know, and that's Ripjaw Raptor, which is a 4/5 green dinosaur for 2/2 green, and it says enrage. Whenever it's dealt damage, you get to draw a card.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So,
although personally, I'm a huge fan of the ranging raptors.
And ranging raptors are.
The Ranging Raptor is the 3-drop 2/3 that whenever it's dealt damage, you search your library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield tapped.
So it seems like if you have multiple dinosaurs with these valuable enrage triggers, just doing one damage to your team can give you such incremental value. Am I right?
Yes. It does do a lot for me. And then I'm running a lot of anthem effects so that I don't have to have my creatures die when they enter the battlefield due to other effects, or just make them bigger so I can do damage to them.
Right.
But there's other cool cards. Enchantments mostly, because the bread and butter of the deck is in enchantments. Going way, way back to the Weatherlight set, I'm running Aetherflash.
Amazing. What does Aetherflash do?
It's 2 generic red enchantment, and it says whenever any creature enters the battlefield, Aetherflash deals 2 damage to them. So you over there may be playing a Avenger Zendikar for 14. I was like, sure, go right on ahead. There's an Aetherflash in play, though, so you know. And then I get to do 2 damage to every creature entering the battlefield.
So all your little tokens that your Avenger Zendikar spawns will immediately die.
Yeah.
However, that Ripjaw Raptor you just played will draw you a card immediately.
Or the Ranging Raptors will search you a land, or your Snapping Sailback will get a 1-1 counter, or your Bellowing Aegisaur will put a 1-1 counter on your entire team. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice. Pretty nice. Okay, very cool.
There's one other neat tech card that I'm running that is another enchantment that triggers Enrage. And that's a Light Mind Field out of Rise of Eldrazi. Do you remember that card?
No, I don't. Can you enlighten me, please?
It is also a 4-drop enchantment, a 2 generic white. And it says whenever one or more creatures attack, whether it's you or your opponent, Light Mind Field deals damage to each of those creatures equal to the number of attacking creatures.
Very nice. I have to ask, just because it just popped into my mind, have you ever thought of running Subterranean Spirit?
No, what does that do?
That is a throwback. Gosh, I forget what set it's from. Here it is. Oh, it's from Mirage. So for 3/3 red, you get a 3/3 elemental with protection from red, and you tap it. Subterranean Spirit deals 1 damage to each creature without flying. Seems like a pretty good enrage trigger to me.
Yeah, it is pretty good. I mean, it's not as good as a Pyrohemia, though.
No, it does require being on the board for a turn, and it can die, so it's, you know, much easier to get rid of than an enchantment. And it's not a dinosaur, but, you know, if you're looking for that redundancy, it can get the job done for you.
True.
So, all right, well, is there any other techie tech stuff that you wanted to talk about?
You know, most of it's flavor for the deck, but not as a lot of tech, no. It's really straightforward, beat-em-up kind of deck. You have a lot of fun. You play out lots of dinosaurs. Deal them damage to get stuff. I mean, cool cards like Mirror Entity do a lot for the deck.
I mean, you want to talk about flavor. You did cast a Star of Extinction on me. That was pretty brutal.
I did, yeah.
I was like,
he got ahead of me, and I could not resist. It was just too good.
I've got all these creatures with all these 1/1 counters on them, and you're just like, Star of Extinction, your entire board is dead. Now I'll cast Gishath and rebuild my board immediately.
it was really punishing to him. No, I didn't cast Gishath that turn. I played Selvala's Stampede first.
Oh, that's right. Either way, it was just a complete and total beatdown of dino proportion. So
it was kind of giant.
Yeah, very sweet deck. And I'm going to be cutting that, editing it, and hopefully uploading it to our YouTube page pretty soon here. So look out for that. Gishoth versus Tishana, an EDH battle for the ages. Cool. Very awesome. Love hearing about some good EDH deck techs. So moving on, let's just touch on a little bit of news here. Let's head into the Spike Pit.
Oh, you know, as we're in the Spike Pit, did you hear about that banned and restricted announcement?
Oh my gosh, all the changes that were made?
All of them. The none.
The none. No changes to the banned and restricted list.
It was kind of a surprise, honestly.
Yeah. I know there's people clamoring for things out of Death Shadow and Modern and other such things, but to be honest, I don't really see any one deck becoming so oppressive such that no one even wants to play a different kind of deck. You know, it's not an Aetherworks Marvel. It's not a Saheeli Cat combo. It's not Emrakul. Like, people are playing decks that are fun, and they're winning.
Yeah.
So why mess with that? You know? So good job, Wizards, on not tampering with what's not broken. So
for once.
For once. Well, yeah, we're
Wait,
not going to go down that
when we
that
talk about that, they did tamper with something that was kind of broken, but not completely.
Which is?
MTGO.
Oh. Tampered with? How so? How
I mean, they're replacing it in a lot of people's minds with Arena.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because...
Which...
go ahead.
I understand they need to have that advancement so that they can have a system to combat against things like Hearthstone. Thank you. Because Hearthstone's really beating this up right now. And they just want to be able to have a format for digital play that people want to play.
Right.
I can't blame them. It's a great idea. But a lot of people are really, really worried that it's going to replace MTGO.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I 100% believe them because, you know, the world is based on progress and, you know, companies are based on profit and everyone wants to keep with the times. And I really don't see it as a problem for Hasbro to see MTGO evaporate. I mean, they could care less if they're getting their money from MTG Arena, then there's really no reason to keep MTGO afloat. Now, obviously, that won't happen tomorrow. You know,
no.
they won't be able to support legacy, vintage, or even modern in the foreseeable future. So I think that there are still some legs to stand on for MTGO in the next year or two. But if, you know, if you're Wizards or if you're Hasbro, you're really going to want to sort of streamline your digital product into one source. And I think that Arena is going to become that. I think they'll be able to do things like PTQs or even Pro Tours or even, you know, World Championships online. I mean, there's a lot.
Well, they already do PPTQs online and whatnot.
Oh, there you go. But there's just a lot more visual appeal to seeing animations and explosions and bright lights and flashes than it is to see two people at a table. Now,
you mean like lasers and whatnot?
Exactly. Now, there is, you know, a bunch of people that do enjoy seeing the, you know, people's reaction and, you know, how they go into the tank, so to speak, and their emotional response to certain things. And, of course, they'll probably have cameras on the people as well playing. But they may just get with all these other esports if Magic really wants to dive into the world of esports. And we might see coverage of paper Magic, you know, start to dissipate while everything gravitates more towards an easier venue of doing it all digitally. It'll be an interesting next couple of years to see where, you know, Magic's focus is. Obviously, they're going to keep printing their paper product while it still makes them money. And then once they see a drop-off of paper and more of an investment on the digital side, who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, companies look to further their own business, so we can only, you know, say so much. But,
well, I doubt we're going to actually lose paper magic anytime soon. Like, I'm actually at a game store right now, and there are 18 people here drafting, maybe 20.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you're going to have your people who like to do it at home, and you're going to have your people that like to go out and do it. So like you said, I don't see the paper going away anytime soon, but it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what percentage of Magic players are playing online versus what percentage of players are playing in paper. We don't even know how the payment is going to work for Arena yet. I mean, they haven't
released, if at all.
Yeah, they haven't released any of that information yet. So,
although, you know, my hopes and dreams, this is just what I want to see happen with Arena. Mm-hmm. They are already doing this in Pokemon, which is another Hasbro entity, where every pack you open has a card in it with a QR code that redeems a digital pack. Now, could you imagine Arena where you can play, but if you buy paper cards, you get free packs on the online the online version.
That's right. I heard about that. That would be an extreme incentive to want to cross-platform play both in paper as well as in the digital world as well.
Right. Because it's cool.
Yeah. And I mean, if I don't know if they've said they're going to include it, but the fact that trading was a huge part of MTGO, and obviously trading is a huge part of Paper Magic, if you're able to trade cards over Arena, that would be another incentive to want to just gravitate towards the digital side.
Yeah.
You know, Magic's expensive, and if you're able to use your current resources to fund your process, then, well, that's not going to make Hasbro as much money, but it might draw more people online.
Remember, though, like their other system, I'm talking Pokemon, you buy your physical packs at like $4 a piece, and you get your digital pack, but you can also buy digital packs at like $2. Now, with this, there might not be a redemption process, but I think they're already getting away with that from Modo because not a lot of people were doing it. But being able to have them digitally at a smaller cost, it's kind of a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know Hearthstone allows you to draft at a very cheap price.
Yeah.
You don't get to keep cards, but there's people doing it. They're paying money. So, you know, Wizard sees that. Hasbro sees that and is like, well, we can
let's make
that
something
too.
That works. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, indeed. Keep your eyes open for Arena and any developments there for. And then also what we wanted to talk about while we're deep in the spike pit here is we had a national championship this last weekend, and we had Reed Duke as the captain of the team take on two other players, the first and second place finishers. First place went to Oliver Tomajko with a black-blue control deck, and Jerry Thompson finishing in second place with a Teamer Energy deck. So our national team is Jerry Thompson, Oliver Tomajko, and Reed Duke.
Well, I'll let you keep up with that. I don't follow professional players as much.
No, I think it's extremely exciting, and I love following them. I love watching them in coverage. But that is going to be, you know, three powerhouse players heading, you know, representing the United States next time we have the world's competition. So that's exciting. Love it. Love to see blue-black control at the top. I know it's duking it out with Teamer Energy. Oh, and by the way, while we mentioned Teamer Energy, there's been a lot of griping about how powerful of a mechanic energy is, really. And yes, you know, it's a free resource that you gain incremental value on but just by playing other normal cards.
Mm-hmm.
But let's also bring to light the fact that there are cards out there that have the ability to deal with energy, not necessarily wipe it out completely, but just things to consider if you're sideboarding in your deck against Teamer Energy.
I mean, we'll converge on the thought of running things like Solemnity.
Yeah, absolutely. A 3-drop white enchantment, you know, 2 and a white, that says players and permanents can't have or can't gain counters. So, You know, that goes for planeswalkers, that goes for plus one counters, that goes for energy counters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say because it's a three drop, you're obviously going to have to wait a turn or two before you play it. So attune with Aether, Long Tusk. Well, the Long Tusk has to attack. Servant of the Conduit, those kinds of things will gain you a little bit of energy, but it'll really shut down the late game energy gaining process.
Yeah.
So, you know, white has Solemnity. Blue has obviously counter spells and ways to deal with that, but let's also remember Nimble Obstructionist can cycle to counter an energy trigger. And that's not to say that it's super value town, but, you know, in that moment when you're trying to remove a Bristling Hydra and they have four energy and they're like, okay, I'll give it Hexproof, and you just cycle that Nimble Obstructionist away, and now their Bristling Hydra is going to die. And that could be a severe tipping point in the way a game moves. I know Nimble Obstructionist hasn't seen too much time in the spotlight, but let's remember that is a real card, and that, you know, cycling to counter an ability, as well as Disallow. You know, once a Hydra is on the battlefield, the Disallow can counter that trigger as well. You know, blue has a couple tools to get around it. I wanted to jump into red because, you know, when Harsh Mentor came out, everyone was like, oh, this is the future. This card is going to be really, really good against, like, Dirtly Artifacts and stuff. But, you know, the reality is every time your opponent spends energy aside from their Aether Hub, they will be taking 2 damage from every Harsh Mentor you have in the battlefield. So let's say you have 2 Harsh Mentors out and they just want to give that Bristling Hydra Hexproof. Well, they're going to take 4 damage to do that, which is insane.
Or they're going to eat some of their energy to kill it.
Exactly. So remember that Harsh Mentor actually does play a good role against energy decks in this standard format. And just off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything black or green that would directly allow you to deal with energy, just aside from killing the actual creatures that are using it.
Yeah.
But
I don't think there's anything. I think you're really looking to something like Bantu's Last Reckoning, and you're black. You're green. God, I don't know. Maybe a Bristling Hydra.
Yeah, I know, right? You have to fight energy with energy, but therein lies the problem. You know, you got to fight fire with fire. But anyway, I just wanted to send the word out to keep people aware that you need to innovate. There are ways around certain things. I know it might not be the most efficient way, but if you do or are able to counter something at the correct moment, it can make a complete blowout in these games.
Yeah.
So, keep your heads up. Energy is not going to kill us all if we don't want it to. But keep all that little tech in mind there. Well, that's going to bring us pretty much close to the end of the episode. Before we get out of here, we wanted to mention a few things. Number one, remember, this show is sponsored by FlipsideGaming.com. Head on over to Flipside Gaming, order any of your gaming products, magic products, and use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to get 10% off your purchase, which will help us fund future show giveaways. Speaking of giveaways, Greg, I know this wasn't rehearsed, so brace yourself.
I don't know. I don't have anything to hold on to.
Hold on to your pizza, because we are going to be giving away a Torrential Gear Hulk. And the way that you can win this Torrential Gear Hulk is by going and subscribing to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is very new. It's only a couple weeks old, but we are starting to post episodes there. We're starting to post some videos with a whole lot more content to go. I think I'm going to upload a couple of my older videos too, including just some random stupid funny ones. But anyway, head on over.
Are you playing your kids?
No. I made this stupid video during the Cons of Tarkir block where, do you remember in the 90s, the old "Wada" commercial?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I showed you this video yet, but I did a Cons of Tarkir parody where it has that audio. You're going to have to go
check it out. We'll save it. Save it for our people so they can listen to it. But of course, you can find it at...
Yeah, you can find it at, if you go to YouTube.com, I'll post the link in the show notes, but if you go to YouTube.com and you search up The Win Condition, you'll have to scroll down for a minute, but you'll find our logo, you'll find our channel, and you'll find our videos there, and go ahead and hit the subscribe button, and you will be entered in our contest to win a Torrential Gear Hulk. So, All that being said, Greg, why don't we tell them where to find us?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at noobslasher2003.
And you
that's NOOBSLASHER 2003.
Perfect. And you can find me at MTG_Sean. You can find the show at The Win Condition on Twitter again. You can email us at thewincondition@gmail.com. Check out our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/teamwincondition. That'll be it for this week, Greg.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
We will talk to y'all next week.
Have a good weekend, guys.